Save a little more this month. Chime checking accounts have features like fee-free overdraft up to $200 with SpotMe and no monthly fees. Open your account in minutes at chime.com/goals24. Banking services and debit card provided by the Bancorp Bank N.A. or Stride Bank N.A. members FDIC. SpotMe eligibility requirements and overdraft limits apply.
American Giant makes great clothing, sweatshirts, jeans, and more, right here in the U.S. Visit American-Giant.com and get 20% off your first order with code STAPLE20. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com. Code STAPLE20.
Gotta get your brain right if you're trying to make $1 million. If you ain't gonna do it for yourself, then do it for your mama. Only stay surrounded by them people if you know they solid. Elevate your hustle up today to double up your profit. Trying to learn some game, Xavier gonna talk about it. No, Deanna, speak that shit that everybody vouching. Ain't no more excuses valid. Get up off the couch and get up in your bag. To your bank account, need an accountant.
Yo, 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 what's up, everybody? Welcome back to the greatest show on earth, the Millionaire Mindsets Podcast. I am your gracious host, Xavier Miller. And before we start this show, as always, I would like to advise all the guests, the watchers, the viewers, to please like, subscribe, leave that five-star rating, review, comment, all those things, because y'all know we're trying to run those numbers up to wrap up 2023 and going into 2024. We're trying to really go crazy and run it up, come out with some dope fire content for y'all. So if y'all would do all those things, we would greatly, greatly appreciate it. And getting right into the show, so today I got a very special guest, man. He's doing it big in real estate. He's doing his thing. He's coming on the show to provide a lot of value, and I want you guys to get familiar with him, hear his story, take the information in, and his name is Dave Ball, a.k.a. House Rich Dave. Welcome to the show, brother. We're glad to have you here.
Hey, appreciate you having me. Happy to be here.
Man, so let's get right into it, man. So for the viewers, for the listeners, who this may be their first time hearing of you, do you mind just giving a brief background on yourself?
Yeah, most definitely. So I'll just jump into how I got into the real estate industry.
Okay.
So I was 29 and I was actually in the process of buying a home, me and my wife. It was actually the product we were talking about before this episode. And it's actually, you know, it was my fiance at the time. And so like 2 weeks before we're ready to move into the house, we got a call from the lender. Hey, your mortgage is denied. And so very stressful time frame, but it was also like 6 weeks before I was even set to get married. Like probably two of the most stressful things you can do in life, get married and buy a house. And so the crazy thing about it was I was so ignorant about the home buying process. I didn't really understand how stressed out I should truly be, right? Because I didn't understand I was going to lose earnest money, which was like probably like $4,000 or $5,000. I didn't even understand I could lose the property. I was just like, hey, why don't the seller just, why don't they just move back the date and help, and, you know, move back the date to help me out. And so the craziest part about that is this is actually the third home I purchased before. So I was actually on my third home and I had no clue how the home buying process worked still. Like my first home, I actually house hacked that property without my roommate even knowing it. My second home, I purchased a home that eventually I turned into a rental. So you would think, you know, two homes, I would know what I'm doing. But I realized I had no idea about the home buying process. And the craziest even thing about this is because I realized I'd purchased multiple homes and still didn't understand the home buying process, I was in the process of becoming a lender at that point. Because I was like, hey, you know, you bought multiple homes, you really like real estate, you understand like financing, why don't you get into the mortgage industry so you can actually teach people and they can understand what they're doing, not just pushing papers. And so I was actually working for a mortgage company at the time my loan was denied. I'd been in the industry for only like 3 months at that time frame. But it was actually like the company I worked for that actually declined my mortgage. Despite the fact that they knew my financing, I talked to them about the whole process. But the own company I worked for denied my loan.
Why?
Because they said there was an issue with the income. So like the first year that I was working for the company, they were just like, hey, you're on a base income because, you know, it's full commission. But for whatever reason, even though they told me that, they denied my loan because they were like, your income, we don't have any guarantee the income will continue.
Okay.
And which they should have known that because I understand another company, but I work for the company. So I was like, man, I'm just really a number at this point. And so at that point, I was just like, hey, I'm going to get into these mortgage guidelines. I'm going to make sure I understand the process better than the lenders, better than anybody out there. And so that's not really started my journey of kind of like diving like deep into the concept and teaching folks how to buy a home. Because I was like, what happened to me? I don't want that to happen to anybody else. Getting your loan declined 2 weeks before you move in with your fiance, 6 weeks before your wedding, just a horrible experience. So I was like, I gotta.
But this is interesting. So you said you was going to lose earnest money. So why would you lose earnest money? Because they denied the...
Yeah. So how the process works is, like, when you purchase a home, typically you got to give... There's like four times you give money within like the first week of the home. Like, you got to give money to the lender for the appraisal. They can order appraisal with your loan. You got to put down earnest money because that's your skin in the game as a home buyer, right? And so typically it's like 1% of the purchase price. And then you have like your option period. We have a time to inspect the property. You got to pay option money. And then you pay for an inspector as well if you want to get the home inspected. You should definitely get the home inspected. And so when you're buying a new construction home, typically you can get the earnest money back if your loan is denied. But when you're buying like a new construction home, builders just have their own set of rules, right? And so I'd already passed the option money period, like that 7-month window, because like two weeks before closing, pretty much everything should be wrapped up or close to wrapped up at that point. Since we'd already passed that window, like they're at the point where the builder could just keep the earnest money, because I'd already passed that option money window. And so that's why I could have lost like that earnest money in that scenario.
That's interesting. Something. Yeah. I want to go back for a second too. You talked about your first home you own, living with a roommate. Your roommate didn't even know. So break that down for the listeners. Like, how you have a roommate that don't know you own the property?
I want to make on a little quick tangent real quick, because okay. I think one of the interesting things about this story is that like buying real estate can really accelerate your wealth building journey. So like one of the things I often see online, I'll see like finance pros and gals, and they'll be like, hey, you don't need to own real estate to build wealth, which is 100% true, right? But they'll do this pitch where they're like, hey, matter of fact, you know, don't let anybody shame you to not own it, to being a renter. They'll go through this whole spiel, and I'm like, okay, why you gotta do all that? And then typically they'll give a couple examples. They'd be like, well, I know these people. They'll give like four people. I know four people that have been lifelong renters and they built a whole bunch of wealth. And so I'm like a nosy person. So typically I'll click on the profile and see what this person is about. And so what do you think like the common thread is typically amongst these lifelong renters that are able to build like a bunch of wealth? What would you think the common
lifelong renters
that are actually able to build like a bunch of wealth? Like, what do you think the common thread is amongst these people?
Business owners for one. I'm thinking they probably in a position where something with their business is attached to them convincing people to not own.
Pretty much. So typically, like I say, the common thread is like I'll click on the page and it'll be like I'll look at somebody. So typically, like the finance folks, they'll at some point they'll break down like the what they make per month. And so like I run the numbers and I'll be like, okay, it's like, oh, you know, Jenny, she works in Phoenix and she makes like $9,810 after tax. So I'm like, okay. And then it's like, oh, she makes another $5,000 selling courses. So I was like, okay. And I always think like the reason that this person was able to build wealth is because they make a lot of money in their business or their W-2 job. It's not because they're renting. It's because they make a lot of money like outside of the business, right? Yeah. So I tell them to say like the common thread is you probably don't know, I would say anybody that either doesn't make close to six figures or owns real estate that isn't like well off. Like I just don't think that person exists. Typically, if you want to be well off, you know, retire early, you got to typically have some sort of like high earner, or you have to own real estate. Like real estate is that great accelerator, right? And so I tell a story to say that, like I know you've had a guest on here, like Andre, you know, he famously tells you folks that he made $26,000 a year before he got into real estate. Mm-hmm. And like my example, by the time I got out of the Navy, I had a net worth of like $106,000, like in my bank account at 25, because I owned real estate. I didn't make a bunch of money in the Navy. So like how I got into that was my environment. Like a very important thing was me growing up, like I never lived in an apartment before. And so when I graduated college, I was like, okay, it's time to buy a house. That just makes sense. I've always lived in a home. Everyone just lives in homes. Like that's what makes sense to me. And so the advantage I had was my parents that own real estate. So I was able to talk to my parents and be like, hey, like how do I buy a house? And they kind of walked me through the home buying process and you know what you had to do. And they're like, you know, look at the property. And some of the things that I knew I wanted in a property was one, I know I never wanted to cut grass. Just I remember as a kid, like every house we owned just had a hill. And I just remember putting that lawnmower up the hill. And I never wanted to do that. And I was like, I was in the military at the time too. And so I was like, I need a place that I can, that can be secure. I need a place that I can be gone for 6 months at a time, 3 week trips, and that I don't have to basically be there. Folks won't know I'm gone. So I'm like, okay, I want to get like a condo or a town or something like that. And so I was talking to my parents about that, and they were like, hey, have you ever thought about getting a roommate? And I was like, not really. I'm out of college. I'm independent. You know, why would I want to have a roommate? Where they were like, hey, you can actually have your roommate contribute to a portion of the rent. And I was like, oh, I never thought about that. And so they were like, you know, you probably should get a property that's maybe, you know, two, three bedrooms. So I was like, oh, this is going to be a little bit more than I was looking at, you know, one bedroom condos. So they were like, well, if you have an issue paying the rents, or you can't get a roommate, they were like, hey, we can help you out with the mortgage. Like, always leave that part in the story, because sometimes people are taken back. They're like, well, you have an advantage because you had a parent that would potentially help you with the mortgage if you couldn't find a roommate. And I'm like, well, one, just buy a home within your budget if you don't have a parent that does that. Then two, I'm like, hey, well, you work on being the parent to the kid and do that down the future. Because, you know, everyone likes to talk, you know, generational wealth, but they don't want to look down the future and take generational actions in that case. And so my eventually end up getting the home. And so my parents were like, no, you're both 20. I found a roommate. So like, hey, you're both 20. You're both young guys. We don't want there to be like any conflict in the property. Like, we don't want it to be a situation where he thinks, hey, you're both the same age. They don't have to pay rent. You don't have to be arguing about rent with the roommate or fix this and that. So they were like, hey, just let us be the property manager. So essentially for the entire 5 year time frame, he paid rent to my folks. They put it in my bank account. When there was an issue, and I truly don't know if he knew my parents even owned the property. He just knew that he was sending money to somewhere else. And so if there was an issue, he would let them know. They would call me. I would fix the issue. That went on for 5 years. It helped me get off to a great financial start in life, because essentially my living expense for five straight years was $500. And so I was able to keep that money. I was able to invest. And by the time I got out the military at 25, I had $106,000 in my bank account to my name, just based on just house hacking that single family property for five years. So, so folks think you always need a multifamily property to house hack. But same roommate, 5 years, had a living expense of about $500 for five straight years.
That's definitely accelerated, I'll tell you that. And also, I think that's a big lesson to everybody that's listening, because oftentimes it's going to be people that's listening and watching this, and they got roommates that the roommate directly knows they're the owner of the property, and they probably going through hell. So that's a good strategy for the people that's listening that do have roommates, where you can position it where they don't know that you're the owner of the property, whether they got parents or siblings or a friend. You could put different people in position that is the property manager, and they could pay them, and your roommate could be I have no idea what's really going on. I think that's a dope way, because like you said, at the reality of it is, when you got young people living in the house, issues can occur. And then now somebody don't want to pay rent. They think, because y'all peers, it's like, I can slide by with things. It can get kind of fishy. So that's definitely a good way. I think that's a great nugget, bro. That's a great helpful nugget, man. And also, I want to talk about, so you, what are the, because this is, I've seen you speak on this before. What are the biggest mistakes, from your opinion, things you've seen, heard, that people make when it comes to buying a home?
So I'd say some of the top mistakes folks make is one, and this is coming from a realtor, is one, folks talk to a realtor like way too early in the process.
What do you mean?
So like, I have this this 8-step home buying process I like to tell folks, because they always come to me too early. And like, a realtor is step number 8. And so realtors are knowledgeable about the home buying process. But here's the thing, like, your first step in buying a home is just believing you can, as corny as it sounds. But like, number two is like, you need to establish like your own goals and like why you want to buy this home. Like, is it because, you know, you saw some guy on Instagram say you should buy a home? It's because you're trying to, you know, build generational wealth. You need to truly establish like why you want to own a home in the first place, because ownership isn't for everybody, right? And so you need to establish your goals, which helps set up like your portfolio. And so a realtor can't help you establish your goals. Your friend in the break room at work, they can't help you establish your goals. Like, you need to really truly understand like why you want to buy a home. That's got nothing to do with the realtor. Next is like, you got to establish truly a budget. And so like, one of the biggest mistakes I see home buyers make is they don't truly know how to establish a budget when it comes to buying a home. So I'm going to kind of ask you this question. So if I were to ask you, Like, I'm not going to ask you a specific question, but you can just think of the answer in your head, because maybe this is a little bit personal.
Right.
But if you're looking to buy a home, just think in your head, like, y'all out there too, like, what would your budget be when it comes to buying a home? You probably got a number in your head.
Yeah, yeah.
So is it above or below $100,000?
Above.
Okay. I'm pretty sure everybody said a number over $100,000 in their head. And so that's the issue I think most people have, is because when I talk about a budget for buying a home, I'm thinking of a monthly payment. What happens is a lot of folks, when they go to buy a home, they think home price first. And here's the issue with that. Once you talk about a home price, you've already probably at this point, you're like, hey, I want a $400,000 home. You've probably already gone to Zillow. You're looking at the neighborhoods with $400,000 homes. You're looking at the pools. You're looking at the countertops. You're looking at the golf course nearby. You're looking at the businesses. You've already mentally moved into at least a $400,000 neighborhood, right? So, and I knew this was back when I was a lender. So when folks would come to me, they would always have this number in mind as far as like the home price. And so I'd be like, okay, that's great. Then I would always ask them, like, what do you think the monthly payment is on that property? And just Kanye shrug, right? Like no one would ever know. And the issue with that is you'll end up talking yourself into a home you can't necessarily afford. Like if I had asked you before you had done the whole Zillow search and all this, you may have said $2,500.
Yep.
But now you've already mentally moved into this $400,000 home. And so the budget, the mortgage there may be $3,300. So now you're like, $2,500, $3,300. I can make it work. But you're not even factoring all the expenses outside of buying a home, like all the maintenance and stuff. So in actuality, like that payment is actually like a $1,000 jump over where you're at. So I always tell folks, in my opinion, the best way to go about finding a home is take like what you're paying for rent right now. So let's say you're paying $2,500 a month for rent, and just work backwards in order to find out what that is for a home price. And just how you do it real quick is you can literally just go into Google and type in the word mortgage calculator. And so what'll pop up is a mortgage calculator. And what you want to do is start putting in like loan amounts that'll get you a number that's like, it depends on your area, but that's like 60 to 70% of 2,500. So let's say that's 1,500, I think, if I'm doing that math. So you want to start just putting in loan amounts into the Google calculator until it spits out a principal and interest payment that's like $1,500. So next, and let's say that's a $300,000 home. So next, what you want to do, or loan. So next, what you want to do is just go to Zillow.com and start looking at $300,000 homes in your local where you want to find a home, right? And so you'll find a couple of things. You may find out there's no $300,000 homes in the neighborhood you want to live in. You may find out there are some homes, but they're not quite the home I want. Or you may be like, hey, this is something I can work with. But as a reminder, like, your first home should not be your dream home. So don't be too picky on their first home. And then so you just go down to the details, and you'll find out what the tax history is on that property. And so that's how you figure out what the taxes are. You want to look at a couple properties, because they may be a property that has like some exemptions and the taxes are super low. But just take that number now and divide by 12. So let's say the taxes are $4,800, right? You take $4,800 divided by 12, you got $400 a month. So now you got your $1,500 principal and interest payment, your $400 taxes. And now homeowners insurance is a little bit tricky. I just use what's in Zillow. But that's a quick way to work backwards from what's a comfortable payment for you, and then formulate that into like a principal, interest, tax, and insurance payment, or a mortgage payment. So that's why I always advise folks to take that written number, work backwards to the home price, because that's what you can actually afford. It may not be the home you like. It may not be the home with the picket fence and the pool and all that, but that's the actual number you can afford. Like I said, starting with the home price in mind, I've seen a lot of folks just end up house poor because they fall in love with the neighborhood and everything around it.
Are you concerned about AI taking over all the jobs? Although AI can enhance software testing efficiency, there are still in-demand careers that require human expertise, like quality assurance. QA engineers are crucial in defining testing strategies, identifying test cases, and managing testing environments. On that note, Careerist Manual QA course can equip you with the necessary knowledge, mentorship, and advice to become a QA specialist, regardless of your experience or college degree. As a licensed education provider, Careerist offers an interactive course that takes less than 6 months to complete and provides one-on-one guidance from personal mentors. Moreover, Careers has already helped over 1,000 graduates secure high-paying jobs in tech across 40 different states. And by using my link under this video, you can receive a discount on the course's cost. To get the 10% discount, follow the link in the description below of this video and fill out the application. Start your journey towards a successful tech career today.
Yeah, that's very easy for it to happen. But I want you to talk about, because this is a phenomenon I see a lot, especially with people around my age that they're buying their first home. Uh-huh. You know what I'm saying? You're seeing people on the gram. You like, you know, people living it up. They living their life. People want to get their dream home. But like you just stated, buying your dream home for your first home necessarily isn't the best idea.
Yeah.
But talk about why that isn't a smart idea.
Well, a couple of things, like life changes, right? Statistically, you're only going to be in a home for like 1 to 5 to 8 years to begin with. So while you have this master plan of buying this dream home, you may not even be married or with a guy or girl. Like life just changes in general, first and foremost. So the idea that you're going to buy this home at 25, and then you're going to be on the rocking chair on the porch with your spouse at 7. That's just not the truth. And then next, like buying your first home, if you buy it strategically, it's just a great way to build your real estate portfolio, right? Mm. I always say real estate is like a get rich slow scheme if you do it right. Of course, there are folks that, you know, hey, I got 20, 50, 10, 100 doors, right? But for the most part, like you can just buy a home, live there for a year, move, and do that every couple of years. And so when I'm looking at homes, and this is with hindsight based on my area of expertise, look at a home as just having at least one good feature. Whether that's like when I got a home in the DC area, I was like, I want a home that's going to be near Metro. Like that's the feature I want the home to have, because I know in a year or 2 years when I go to rent that property, a home by Metro is a very attractive feature. That's going to be something folks are always going to want, versus you're just buying a home that you like, but it may just be a home that you like. It may not have the features that a renter wants. I always say buy a home from the perspective of a renter, because that's most likely what's going to be able to get you to rent the property and just kind of build out that real estate portfolio. But yeah, the easiest way to buy your first home, to build your portfolio, just buy your first home, put 3% down, conventional, 3.5% down, FHA, and just do that. No need to wait for that home with a picket fence, mm-hmm.
No, that's a bar. I mean, I never heard nobody say, but buy a home from the perspective of a renter. I never heard nobody say that. That's definitely a bar, because like you said, the statistics tells you that long term, you're not probably most likely not going to be in a home anyway.
Yeah.
So you still going to own it. You can rent it out, and you can always generate money capital from this home. So that's big. Mm-hmm. I hope that's not going over people's head. That's a big piece of advice right there, mm-hmm. man. But talk about, so at this point, like you've been in real estate almost 20?
Yeah, since 2017. So I guess knocking on seven years at this point.
So 7 years at this point. So what are strategies, like are you actively buying like rental properties and stuff like that?
So right now, the last property I bought was in 2019.
Okay.
So like where I'm at right now is I had three rental properties and a primary residence with my wife right now. And so looking at properties, but honestly, like as we were talking about before this, like the market is kind of wild. You got to wait for the right time to buy a property, especially if it's not, if you're looking at a rental property, you got to run the numbers. So right now, just from my perspective, for the goals that I'm trying to establish with my wife and I, is like, we're not looking to purchase any more like investment properties right now. You know, potentially if we find a deal, you're kind of always looking, but if we find like a deal, there's a potential that we may move from the residence right now and rent that out and buy another property. But for right now, just from our point of view, and yes, this is a realtor saying, hey, maybe you don't want to buy right now. It's like, just from our point of view, it doesn't make sense for us, for the goals we have established. Because once again, I have a wife and a nice little pup. If I was a single person, maybe I'd have some more leeway. But just for where I'm at in life right now, we're not in the in the point right now, we're looking at like investments and stuff like that.
Speaking of, you said the right time. When do you think it will be the right time?
So the right time to buy for anybody is always, it depends. That's just the answer I give to anybody, whether rates are 7.5%, whether rates are 3%. It really depends like what your goals are. Like that's why I always say is focus on your goals, focus on your budget, and the rest will fall in place. So like right now, you know, I think as we speak, rates are like a little bit over 7%. Home prices are at all-time highs, but they hit all-time highs every single year. And so a lot of folks are like, hey, should I wait to 2024, 2025 to buy a home? So I want to give folks a little bit of perspective on the market, right? Because I think a lot of folks are just kind of still stuck in this this COVID mindset, this 2-3% interest rate mindset. And hey, I'm waiting for rates to drop because, you know, when I remember realtors on TikTok pointing at low rates and lenders doing all this on TikTok, and they think 2-3% rates are normal. When I got to the industry in 2017 as a lender, a 5% rate was perfectly normal. I think rates may have dipped down to like 4% at some point in 18 or 19. So if you are like, hey, and that's your prerogative, I waited for rates to go down, make sure you have the proper perspective. Because if you're waiting for rates at 2-3%, that's never going to happen again, unless there's another COVID or heaven forbid, there's like a, you know, we get into a war or something like that, you know. Not that there's anything going on right now that cause a war, but you know,
right.
But heaven forbid something like that happens. But so here's what I think a lot of folks don't connect the dots on. Like, why were rates so low in 2020, 2021, 2022? It's because the Federal Reserve moves the benchmark rate, the cost to borrow money. So typically it hovers around like 2-2.5%. And so the benchmark rate is basically the cost for banks and lenders to borrow money. So when COVID hit, folks didn't know what was going on. They lowered that benchmark rate down to like 0.25%, from like 2.5% down to 0.25% to stimulate the economy. Rates were so low, folks were spending money. It kind of did its thing. And that's why real estate prices, you know, went up at like literally a 43% clip from like 2020 to 2021. Folks are spending. This caused inflation. Now, part of inflation too was just companies raising prices. I think we all know that and hide behind inflation with the price, but that caused inflation. So in June of 2022, inflation peaked at, I think, 9.1%. So, you know, the Fed is like, okay, or Congress is like, oh, we need to get inflation under control. So Congress gave the mandate to the Federal Reserve to get inflation down to 2%, from 9.1% to 2%. So now that's why you've seen rates go up so dramatically. You hear about all these rate hikes because the Federal Reserve is trying to get inflation down to 2%. So that's why, like, from June 2022, they raised the cost of borrow money or the benchmark rate like 11 straight times. And that's why rates are like in the 7-8% threshold because right of that. Up. So now as inflation gets under control, the Federal Reserve, hopefully like in 2024, may lower the cost to borrow money. So they meet almost every month. But I think from what I've seen, there may be like one or two rate cuts in 2024. And I say all that to say is, don't wait on 2% rates, 3% rates, 4% rates. From everything I've seen, like, rates are most likely just going to be in the sixes to throughout 2024. So if your thing is like, hey, I'm waiting for rates to drop, your prerogative, but don't wait till they hit the twos and threes and fours. That's not happening probably for another like 2-3 years. So
yeah, you, like you said though, everybody kind of, we, you know, got used to those COVID rates.
And yeah, yeah.
We thought that was the new norm, the new reality. Yeah. Well, it wasn't. But let me ask you this: have anybody ever told you you sound like Barack Obama?
I've got that a little bit. I get that sometimes. I get the I look like you know who Bernie Williams is on the Yankees. Uh-uh. Oh, Google that after the episode. Okay. You'll have a chuckle. So I get that as well.
One of the Yankees players. I ain't gonna say his name because I ain't gonna put his business out there. But I know him. We used to live in the same building.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, he's a real. Well, this is completely off topic. But baseball players, they are so like they so normal looking. Uh-huh. So it's not like a professional basketball player or a football player where you see him.
Yeah, LeBron walking the door.
You know
that. Or even the 12th man walking the door. You know who that is. Yeah.
You like, you do something. Like, who are you? But a baseball player, I remember we were sitting down at the bar at my building and we was already chatting for an hour. We talking for an hour just about life and about regular stuff. And then towards like the last hour, he's like, yo, bro, did you know who I was?
Uh-huh.
And I was like, brother, I don't know who the hell you are right now. I'm like, who are, you must be somebody for you to say that. I'm like, who are you? So he told me who he was. I'm like, oh, shit. He showed me his Instagram and all that. I'm like, oh, shit, he really, he's a professional baseball player. He's actually really good, too. And he was really good people. But that was just, I don't know why, that's just a sign of the pop in my head. But also, I want to talk about this. Let me ask you this. Do you feel like, as a military vet, do you feel like, because I got my own opinions on this, do you feel like the military was a cheat code for you?
Yeah, I definitely do. Because one, to be honest with you, like your first, I don't know, man, first 5 to 10 years of life, post-college, post-high school, you don't know what you're doing.
You have no idea what you're
yeah,
doing.
Yeah, just, and then, you know, you got folks getting into to student loan debt because it's like, oh, I need to go to college because I don't really know what I want to do. Like your first 2 years of college, you don't know what you're doing. And so hopefully you decide on a major. But yeah, the military definitely was. Like I went to the U.S. Naval Academy. So the American taxpayer, they paid.
He was an officer?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, they paid for my college. So, one, when I graduated college, I had no debt at all. And another thing is, I'll tell you this, most folks don't know this either. So at least at the U.S. Naval Academy, what they do is your junior year, they'll give you, because the banks want to hook you in because they know, hey, this person's going to have a job for at least 5 years.
Exactly, guaranteed income.
So they give you this loan. They give you you can take up to a $25,000 loan, but they give it to you at like 0.0. It's almost what? Free money. It's like 0.0. I'm probably saying the number too, but it's like 0.0. It's like 0.05 interest. And so,
damn, I should have been an officer.
Yeah, because they want to hook you in. So I've been with my bank ever since they gave me that loan. And so that's actually what helped me buy my first property.
That's crazy. At
20 was a little bit of money from that loan. But yeah. You're not going to know what you're doing for the first 5 years of life. And I know the military ain't for everybody, but it's just like learn some life skills, meet some folks, and learn some life lessons. And then once you're ready to hit the world, like at least you don't have student loan debt. So you meet folks, man. It's good. One of the most important lessons I think I learned in the military is that it's just to take action, right? And so and I remember one of my good friends, I was talking to them, and he was like, hey, I can't remember the question I was asking, but I was like, hey, are you ready for X, Y, and Z? And he was like, ready or not, it's coming. So you might as well get ready, because I think a lot of folks don't realize that like no decision is a decision. It's a decision to stay exactly where you are. It's better to make a bad decision quick, get the information from the bad decision, recalibrate, assess, and do something else than to sit there for forever, and then now you made the bad decision, but you don't even got time to recover from that bad decision. But yeah, the military was definitely for many reasons, financially, mentally. I'm here in Dallas because of a guy I know from the Navy, but definitely like a head start in life. So
I'm kind of smirking and laughing a little bit because that answer, that was 100% a military answer. I can tell you, I can tell you a vet based on that. I could talk to people and based on how what they saying, I'm like, oh, that's a vet. Uh-huh. But bro, I can't repeat that better than what you just said. Like I'm uh-huh. under how I feel about it is, and I tell all younger people, especially like early 20s, late teens, I'm like, dude, if you go in the military, because I feel like I can show anybody, if you join in the military right now, I can show you, if you listen step by step, what I tell you, by the time you're 40, you could be a millionaire. Like just being in the military, it's not going to be something overnight where I'm 25, a million. It's going to take time, obviously, but 40 is extremely young, man. Like you said, the thing with no debt, paying for your school, getting job experience, traveling the world while getting paid, and then you could get out within 4 to 6, 10 years. Yeah. And if you do the right steps, do everything you post, you could be pretty much set for life, man. Yeah. I preach this to everybody. And like you said, the military isn't for everybody. But if you're somebody that's thinking about it, that think you could do it, especially when you got that youthful advantage, that you're 19, 20, 21, you still got so much time ahead of you. Let me ask you this. What do you think is better? I just asked somebody else this.
All right.
A military vet with all his benefits or a college degree?
Military vet with all his benefits or college degree. So my answer a lot is it depends. It depends what your degree is in. Right. So I mean, if you're an aerospace engineer or you got some sort of engineering degree or something like that, or computer, some sort of degree that's going to result in a high paying job, yeah, definitely. But if you're just a like most folks, you're going to college and you're just figuring it out as you go. It's just like, let me get a degree in business, or let me get a degree in econ. Or you don't really know. It's just, I need to put something on this line. I'm a junior. I got to figure this out. I think that's how most people are. It's like, you might as well be that military vet with the benefits. You got, you know, your GI Bill, which if you work backwards, you get to go to college for free. If you go in as enlisted, you got your VA benefits, 0% down to get a loan. At Home Depot, you get to park in the front at Home Depot. I mean, like, yeah, I would say it really depends. But like I said, the military ain't for everybody. But if you don't know what you want to do, I would strongly consider it due to all the benefits. Just it's 5 years, 5 years of your life. You'll get out. You'll be 22, 21, and at least in the same position as the folks, you know, that graduated from college, but with no student loans.
At the minimum, too, probably. Yeah, yeah. Because how old were you when you got out?
I was 25.
You was 25.
Yeah.
And as you said, everybody that's listening, you was 25 with $100,000 net worth.
Yeah, 106,000. And it's funny, I remember that number specifically. It was like 106,000 because when I got out of the military, this is the first time I ever met my financial advisor in person. And so I was meeting with him. I was like, because I just been just putting money into an account and all that. I'll say, boys and girls, watch out for advisor fees. But I've just been putting money into auto deposit into an account for like 5 years. And I'm very frugal. And so anytime my bank account, my checking account started to get bigger, I would just increase the deposits. Like I didn't change my living habits one bit over those 5 years, even though in military you get those pay increases. But I remember sitting down with him. I was like, am I doing okay right now? I had no clue. I was like, am I doing okay? And I remember he laughed at me, but like a good laugh. He was like, yeah, you're doing okay, buddy. You're doing better than probably 95% of my clients. And that's something that I never really thought about. But join the military.
bro, I had a similar experience right before me and my wife got out. We had a very similar experience. We went to go see one of the financial advisors just to see like if there anything that we're not doing that we could be doing, or is there anything that we're doing wrong? It was our first meeting. He was an older guy. He was probably like in his 70s. And we went to his office and we sat down and he's like going over our financials and all that and stuff. And he's just like, he's quiet. I could just tell he's just reading and it's like 10 minutes. He's just not saying anything. So I'm asking questions and advice and he's like, dude, just keep doing what y'all doing. Yeah, he didn't really give me like, and he was just like, keep doing what you were doing. Like y'all are like well on y'all way. And at this time, I think I'm 25, same age, 25 years old. So, this sounds like a damn military ad or something. But we're just talking about, you know, we speaking vet to vet, talking about our experiences and how beneficial it can be just for the people that may be sitting at home pondering and thinking, like, is that something I can do? Because the internet, everybody on the internet will gas you up to think, like, you're going to do this, you're going to get on the journey with entrepreneurship when you're 18, 19, you're going to become a millionaire by 25.
Yeah, but I will say one thing about the military. You probably heard this, like, choose your rate, choose your fate. There are some rates and billets you pick where you will be in the dirt, in the sand, doing stuff. But you can be you can be a cook. You can be like a mechanic and learn a skill set there. So
that's true.
Like, so just do something. Like,
that's true.
Like, this
that's
endorsed true. By the U.S. Army. Like,
we sound like we have, this is not a paid advertisement. This is not an ad. We just thinking. But that's a good point. That anybody will tell you that. Like, you just make sure if you thinking about that, make sure you're doing something that you can see yourself doing.
If your recruiter's like, hey, don't worry about your designation. You're gonna be in the you're gonna be in the dirt, in the mud. So
in Minot somewhere in the -20-degree weather or something.
Yeah.
Let me let me ask you this. So for someone that's listening and watching, right, and it's a lot of people that's considering buying their first home, that they might be around 30, younger than 30, what would you say is the main things like that they need to look out for regarding, I'm speaking to people that make probably not great money but not bad, so just like pretty much average income. What would you say there are the main things they need to look out for during this process?
So I'm going to run you through this quick 8-step process as quick as I can.
Okay.
So step one, I always tell folks, just believe, as corny as it sounds, if you don't think you can buy a home, you're right. So, but also if you do think you buy a home, that doesn't mean you're right. You got to put together a plan. So as I mentioned, like the second step was making sure you're setting your goals. Cause like I said, the internet will tell you, you got to buy a 4-unit property, house hack, kick your feet up and all that. The people 90% of people saying that have never purchased a multifamily property in their life. That's why they just think real estate is buy a multifamily property, kick your feet up. But establish your goals. Like, do you want to buy a multifamily property? Are you truly ready to be a landlord? Are you ready at 25, 30, 20 to tell a 40-year-old man that's later in their rent, well, can you pay the rent? Like, are you actually ready to do that? Like, being a landlord isn't as easy as you think it is. So set up a plan. Maybe you want to buy a single family property, live there for a year, move. Maybe you want to get the condo. Like, establish like your actual goals and your plan is step number two. Like, step number three is literally actually establish an actual budget, an Excel spreadsheet, put numbers on there and see what you got left over at the end to make sure you're picking that home price correctly. Then step number four is actually figuring out how long it will take you to purchase this home. Let's say you have zero in your bank account right now. It's going to cost you, let's say, $24,000 to buy this home. If you have a budget and a spreadsheet, you'll see that, hey, every month I have like $1,000 left over. So it's like, well, man, that's going to take me 24 months to buy the home. So now you either decide, maybe I want to look at a cheaper home. Maybe I want to run some DoorDash, pick up a side hustle. Now you at least know that, hey, I have a plan in order to work towards this down payment and purchasing the home and figuring out like what the down payment is for various properties. So if you don't know it, USDA, VA, NACA, 0%, conventional 3%, FHA, 5.5%. That's how you figure out like your down payment for the properties. And one perk of the FHA loan is you can buy up to 4 units with the 3.5% down payment. But recently the guidelines changed for conventional loans that now you can put down starting November, I don't know what day of the week it is. Starting November 18th, you can actually put down only 5% to buy a multifamily property with a conventional loan, which is a huge game changer, as the folks say. But making sure you know what those goals are so you can figure out the down payment. Next is figuring out like what your closing costs are going to be. So a lot of times I see this bogus advice online where folks like say between 2 and 7% of the sales price for a down payment. And obviously that's horrible advice because there's an actual number here. Like here in the Dallas market, it's about your closing costs are going to be about 3.5% of the sales price. But if you save between 2 and 7%, you're buying a $400,000 home. Is it $8,000 or is it what, $28,000, right? Like you need to figure out what that number is in order to actually establish your budget. So figuring out what those closing costs are there. Next, so you've done all this kind of work to figure out at least the financial part. I always say next is just kind of, I would say it's like the woo side. You want to step back and say, okay, am I actually ready to buy a home? Like from a mental standpoint, like, okay, I'm here. I have the finances in order, but is my job stable? Mm-hmm. Am I ready to do this? Have I talked to my loved one about it? You know, maybe she wants to move back to Seattle. Have we even had this conversation about me purchasing a home with like my significant other? And then like after you do all that, so we haven't even talked about a realtor or a lender yet, like all this stuff, you want to do this self-realization before you get influenced by any sort of real estate professional. Next, now finally you want to talk to a lender to figure out like, okay, I had this great plan about what I wanted to do. Now can I actually qualify for it? Because I think where a lot of people get twisted is your lender will tell you what you can qualify for, not afford, what you can qualify for. So people sometimes conflate those two. It's like, oh, the lender said I can qualify for $500,000, but you may only be able to afford $4,000. It's not the lender's job. They'll look at your debts and DTI and probably be like, this is going to be tough sledding for this person. But it's not their job to tell you that, hey, you can't afford this. So they're not going to do that. And then finally, when that's all said and done, you've got qualified. Say now finally you want to sit down and like talk to a realtor after all this. So I think people talk to a realtor like way, way, way too early in the process. So I would say go through that process. And lastly, like, don't be afraid to get your credit pulled. Like, there's this whole myth about, like, I would call like big credit, who put out all this bogus information about inquiries and all this stuff ruining your credit. In the history of applying for a home loan, not a single person has ever been denied a mortgage because they had too many credit, they had too many inquiries. That's just not a thing. It's just some bogus thing that credit repair people tell you in order because they're easy to remove, but don't be afraid of credit increase at all. So.
That's some valuable advice, man. I really appreciate that. Mm-hmm. And something that you spoke on in regard, like ready to be in a landlord and how challenging it is. Like, I love that message, bro, because we know the narrative online And it's good. There's positive. Like, I love that. And like, and this is something that I've done on my platform. We are convincing and encouraging people, I'll say, to start investing in real estate, buying properties. But sometimes that narrative, especially when you see online, is all people saying, buy a property, just buy, just whatever, just go buy real estate. Yeah. And it's like, you're not telling their listeners and everybody that's watching, like, what they can go through after they buy a property. Like, the stuff that you may have to deal with tenants not paying, with tenants just being dickheads, with like all kinds of stuff that can happen. You have to mentally prepare for it, because it can get really crazy, man. What do you do when a tenant ain't paid you rent in 6 months and you are in a tenant friendly state? Like, what do you do in those situations? And that's something that everybody
need to consider.
Like, I seen Cardi B talking about, did you see that?
She's
talking about, like, how everybody's saying buy real estate, and she was like, this shit is a lot. Like, it's a lot to this.
Yeah.
And it's not as simple, as easy as me people try to put it online, but it is worth it.
It most definitely.
With the right deals, it's definitely worth it. But my point I'm getting at is, whoever decides to get into this industry, don't just go out and buy anything just because the message online is go buy real estate.
Yeah, and I think also, like, you have to be willing to wait. That's what I tell folks. The easiest way to buy your first investment property is just to buy a property that works for you from the perspective of a renter, and then just wait. Let time pass. Because, like, I'll see all these stats where it's be like, hey, in the top 40 metros, now it's cheaper to rent a home than it is to buy, which is true. But I always say, who cares? Because the real question is it cheaper to rent today than it would be if you had purchased that home 5 years ago? Like, that's the real question you need to ask. Is it cheaper to own today than it will be to rent that home in five years? It's weird. Like, real estate is one of those things that people always want immediate gains from. It's like, no, just like investing. Well, you buy an index fund or something like that. You buy Apple stock. You don't expect to buy a stock on Monday, and then on Wednesday you kick your feet up like Scrooge McDuck. Like, there, like, time has to pass when you're investing in any asset class. And so I like to tell folks, like we're talking at the beginning about my grandma bought a home in D.C. in 1970, right? So sometime during that time frame. And so I always hear folks, they talk about, like, generational wealth. Like, that's the big catchphrase. But folks rarely talk about, like, the generational actions and generational knowledge. So, like, my grandmother bought this home in D.C. around 1970. I'm not even sure what she paid for it. At a certain point in time, like, she could not, she retired, fixed income, couldn't afford the property anymore. And so generational action number one was her buying the property. Generational action number two was my mother purchased the property for her, or put her name on the deed so she could stay in the property. And so it worked out right, because my grandmother got to stay in the property. They got to own the property. And, like, one thing I think, outside of all the financial things with owning real estate, is, like, owning is the difference between, like, having to living where you want to live and living where you have to live. Like, when you rent, folks can say, hey, the lease is up, time to move. When you own, you are there. Like, I mean, property tax can go up, but when you own, you are there. You have the choice to sell or not. And so, like, my first recollection of this property was, like, in the 1990s. Seems like such a long time saying 1990s, right? But I remember walking down the street as a kid, and it wasn't a bad neighborhood, but it wasn't, like, the best neighborhood. There's some unsavory activities, I say, going on the streets. But then I remember when I got out of the military, like, late 2010s, I remember driving back to go see my grandmother. And it's funny, the things you remember as a kid. The last memory of that area is I remember going the other way down the street at night, and there was somebody probably, unfortunately, like, lost their life, because I remember, like, the police lights and the yellow tape. And then probably 15 years later, I'm coming the other direction. Like, my dad's driving, my sister's in the passenger seat. I'm in the seat in the back, and I'm looking down the same block, and I'm like, wow, the block has really, really changed. I remember seeing, like, this shop, like Witch, like the sandwich shop. And I was like, oh, that's pretty cool. They got a nice sandwich shop.
Man, Witch, you know it's a decent area. You can see Witch.
And so, like, we stopped at the stoplight. So we're hitting, and so we stop at the stoplight, and my grandmother's house is left right down the street. And so we're stopping there, and I look through the front window of the car, and I look, and I see there's a Whole Foods on this corner. And this is in downtown D.C., so I'm like, there used to be, like, this old, there used to be a corner store right there when I last remember looking at this property. Now there's a Whole Foods. And so we go down the rest of the street, man. And like now it's the good graffiti. They got murals on the wall and all this stuff. Just because like my grandmother took the general action to buy the home, my parents' general action to keep the property in the family by having my grandmother stay there. And now, like right now, unfortunately, my grandmother has passed. But now, right now, my sister is in the process of like renovating their property. So we think real estate, like there are folks that have like the 10, 20 doors, but real estate, buy a home and sometimes just wait. Like you gotta have like generational wealth in like a week. Like folks want generational wealth in a week, but you gotta sometimes wait a generation or you gotta take actions in order to like build wealth for the family. But that, I've never looked it up because I think it'll be corny, but that property is probably worth close to $250,000, $1 million. It's a townhome in like downtown DC on the same block as a Whole Foods. So
damn.
Yeah.
No, that's heavy, bro. And the generational wealth conversation is always so interesting to me because everybody speaks on it, but it's like, how many of y'all really studying wealth that's been built for generations? Because if you understand generational wealth, you'll know that the most wealthy families lose their wealth within 1 to 2 generations.
Yeah.
They got the saying, the first generation builds it, the second generation enjoys it, the third generation destroys it for a reason.
Yeah, like I think our issue as when I'm talking about us, the black community, is that, you know, we're 400 years behind, so we feel like we got to get it all in one fell swoop. It's like you talk about like your friend, the baseball player. In baseball, it's easier to score a run if you got a runner on first and third than if you got nobody on base. So really what we need to be working on, focusing on, is just getting on base. Like it is great to be Jay-Z or LeBron James. You can some people can be a billionaire in one generation. But even if you look at like Robert Smith, the wealthiest black man in America, he's a fourth generation college graduate. Now, college is not the end all be all.
It's a huge.
As a black man, to be a fourth generation college graduate in this country means that he has some parents that got on base, established things, that when he got the bat, he knocked it out of the park. But I think we need to focus on like getting on base, but we're trying to swing for the fences every single time. And what happens is we never get anywhere, or we get on base and we're doing risky stuff. And then, you know, getting up this baseball now, you're getting picked off in first base. Now you're back to jail, but just like focus on getting on base. Like, and so that maybe your kid has an easier opportunity going forward. But we just want to, every time we at bat, we got to
go for a grand home run.
Yeah, we got to run the play. We got to do all this stuff. Just focus on the basics. It's not sexy, but the basics will help build generational wealth if you think about a generation, not just you know your not just what's happening in your lifetime. So,
that's a hell of a when it comes to the generational wealth conversation. I've been had plenty of conversations about this. That's hands down the best analogy I've ever heard about that.
I appreciate it.
No, seriously, bro, because that is like so many, like you said, we talk about generational wealth all the time, but at the end of the day, we're not taking those generational actions because we taking crazy risks and we just trying to hit a home run, grand slam up to, as far as, I'll take that back. We're trying to hit a grand slam instead of just trying to get on base first, get to second base.
And I'll tell you this, one of the biggest advantages I think I've had in life is, so since I graduated college, my parents have not given me a single penny. But I know deep down inside that if I call my parents on, let's say, January 31st at, I don't know, 4 p.m., like, you know, an hour before the wire closed, and it was like, hey, man, I messed up. I can't pay the mortgage this month. I'm 99% sure my parents would be able to cover it with an hour's notice. And so, like, I'm able to maneuver like that and take risky and make riskier plays and do things like that. Because I know deep down inside, like if everything was to come crashing down, I know I have a safety net. So I think that's another advantage, is like when I talk about getting on base, just being like a safety net for like your kids. So they don't have to worry about taking care of you. They don't have to worry about anything you're doing. They can start building on their own. So I think being able to take like those risks because you are the safety net for your kid is something that I think folks, you know, overlook as well. We look at like the wealthiest people around, like Bill Gates, wealthy parents, Elon Musk, you know, wealthy parents. Like it's very rare. Like I said, in our community, we hold up the Jay-Z's and LeBron's and stuff like that. And like Dame and John, if I were to name like an actual just straight business guy, but it's very rare that you're going to build like generational wealth in one generation. Where you know, get it out the mud. Like everybody likes to talk about. So.
No, I'm so glad you said that because I think that's a beautiful message for everybody to hear and keep in mind. So, and that also alleviates so much pressure on people because society, social media, it's putting so much pressure on a lot of people where they feel like, if I ain't got generational wealth by the time I'm gone, I didn't fail that life. I've been miserable when that's really not the case. So I'm so happy that you really said that. And this is the final thing I got for you before we wrap up. So for everybody that's listening and watching, right? And that what are some words of wisdom, some words of advice that you could give them, or where they may be feeling in a place where it's like, I want to buy a home, but that's just not realistic for me because I don't make enough money. I don't got the good job. I feel like I could never get there. Like, what's that piece of advice you would say to them to uplift them and get them on the right track?
Yeah, so just staying on the generational wealth note is sometimes you may not be able to get there. But once again, if we're thinking long term, put your kids in a position to at least pick up where you left off. Also, like I said, your first home should not be your dream home. Your first home should not be your dream home. So sometimes it may be in a position where you may not be able to buy a home in the most desirable neighborhood. But we always talk about, you know, gentrification. Well, what's gentrification? Gentrification is somebody buying a home in a neighborhood that's undervalued, then bringing value to the neighborhood. Sometimes it's just their race-based value to the neighborhood, if we're being honest. Mm-hmm. But bringing value to that neighborhood, and now prices blow up. So in your community, there's probably an area that, and I'm not saying put safety at risk, but there's probably an area right now where it may not be the best, but maybe that's where you got to start. Like everyone like has to start somewhere. So I'll say that everyone has to start somewhere because real estate, it's always going to be here. It's going to be here, you know, 100 years from now. Folks will always need a place to stay. Like folks always say, folks are like prostitution is the world's oldest profession. But I like to point out to folks that the prostitutes had to rent a room from somebody, right? They had to rent that cave. They had to rent that hut.
They went on the street.
They had to rent that room from somebody, right? So real estate has always existed. So I would say just start somewhere. It may not be the dream home, but just start and at least build that building block for your kid. And so just start and do something. But more importantly, put together a plan. Like just being frustrated because rates are high, home prices are high, you have a right to be frustrated. But if you don't have a plan, like the only person you got to be mad at is yourself. When it's all said and done, if you aren't, I don't know, I'll just leave it at that. I don't want to talk about folks and what they do with their kids. But when it's all said and done, make sure you have some sort of plan and you gave me your best shot. I'll just leave it.
Just leave it.
I'm about to say something that folks who might get upset. So
no, that's wonderful advice, bro. Like planning is everything. That's the first step. You can't do nothing without a plan.
Yeah.
So that's improvement development 101. Yeah, you get a plan. Yeah. What is a notepad? Get on notes on your phone. You got ChatGPT these days.
And I would say this. Like I said, if you want to, I would say if you need help putting out a plan, like reach out to me. Like I literally have an actual plan. You can check out, you know, my Instagram. You can check out my podcast as well. But I have actual actionable steps I like to give folks. I don't just kind of bloviate online, but I got some actual actionable steps to help you formulate a plan. So.
You just segued me right into it, bro. So yeah. I was gonna ask you to plug in all your stuff where people can find you, follow you if they want to buy a home and go through the process with you, whatever it is.
Yeah, so I'd say first and foremost, like if you're looking to understand how to purchase a home, I'll say you can check out my podcast. It's House Rich, the First Time Homebuyer Show. I would say start with episode 109. I lay out like the basic, it's called like the home buying manifesto. I just lay out the basic steps on how to buy a home. So I would say check that out. If you're watching on YouTube, check out my YouTube channel by the same name. There's like a playlist, 2023 home buying playlist. Check that out. If you want to connect with me, I'm here in the Dallas market, but I can actually help you in any market with my network. You can find me on Instagram at House Rich Dave. They say, click the link in the bio. You can schedule a call. I typically say, unless you're in the Dallas area, you can't schedule a call, but if you just tell me you heard me in the podcast, you can schedule a call with me no matter where you are in the home buying process. But start is my start. my words of wisdom or advice. So.
Thank you, bro. And I love that name, House of Rich Dave, because that's a beautiful thing. Because today, you know, keeping up with the Joneses, there's so many people that is house poor, nice home, but barely can afford it.
That's literally why I chose the name, because everyone talks about being house poor, but if you plan correctly, house rich is what you can be. So
That's a beautiful thing, bro. And wrapping up, I want to say, bro, I appreciate you taking the time to come out on the show. This was an amazing conversation. I really loved it, and I know my listeners, the viewers, and even me, I got a lot of value from having this conversation, so I really appreciate you coming
appreciate
on the show,
you too.
Bro.
Appreciate the time. And like I said, I love the show, so yeah, thank you doing your thing as well.
Thank you, bro. Thank you. And in wrapping up, you guys can find me on all platforms. I'm at the official Xavier Miller, and I have the Millionaire Mindsets podcast available everywhere. That's YouTube, TikTok, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook. You can find us on every single platform. And that's all I have for you guys on this episode of Millionaire Mindsets podcast. See you guys next episode. Peace.
Gotta get your brain right if you're trying to make $1 million. If you ain't gonna do it for yourself, then do it for your mama. Only stay surrounded by them people if you know they solid. Elevate your hustle up today to double up your profit. Trying to learn some game, Xavier gonna talk about it. No, Deanna, speak that shit that everybody vouching. Ain't no more excuses valid. Get up off the couch and get up in your bag. To your bank account, need an accountant.
Save a little more this month. Chime checking accounts have features like fee-free overdraft up to $200 with SpotMe and no monthly fees. Open your account in minutes at chime.com/goals24. Banking services and debit card provided by Bancorp Bank N.A. or Stride Bank N.A. Members FDIC. SpotMe eligibility requirements and overdraft limits apply.